Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, welcome back, America, to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Thank you for joining us once again. And if you tuned in hoping to hear about Paul Ryan and CNBC and Hillary Clinton and John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, the whole thing, you're not going to hear it because I just don't care. It's all just... I've lost interest. I actually have more interest in the World Series this year, and I have no interest in the World Series this year. But I did watch some of it last night, only because it crunched up against the local news, and I always have to check the weather, and so I actually watched some of the World Series and realized I did not care. It's just not very entertaining when you don't care. I don't have a dog in that fight, so... Anyway, I'm generally a National League guy, but for some reason this year I find myself hoping that the Kansas City Royals win, even though I think they're an American League team. But now I'm talking like as if I care about it. See, you watch a few minutes of a baseball game. Anyway, so you're not going to hear anything about the World Series or about Paul Ryan or the Speaker of the House or CNBC or the debates or any of that stuff, because I just don't care. Now, you may think, folks, that America somehow miraculously survived Halloween in our increasingly paganified society without a horrifying slaughter of innocent people of epic proportion. Now, how many more Halloweens do you think we're going to make without a mass slaughter on a biblical scale as we become more and more paganified? Well, you may think we made it. That's only if you don't count the three people shot and killed in Colorado Springs on Halloween Day, or the one who was shot and killed up at the Winston-Salem State University, one person shot and killed there. Now, there was a time in this country where if one person had been shot on a university campus and three people had been shot in a small American city, shot and killed, by some guy who, it seems, just decided to walk down the street in Colorado Springs and shoot people. There was a time when that would have shocked the nation, and the headlines this morning would have screamed the Halloween massacre, and the whole nation would have been stunned. But instead, it's almost as if not much really happened on Thanksgiving. I'm really upset, by the way, with the Denver Post and the way they reported the Colorado Springs massacre. Their headline was, "Four dead in officer-involved shooting." So the average moron just reads that headline and thinks Black Lives Matter and the police, well, they move on. And the job of the headline writer is done. He's once again tainted the honor of the police, which seems to be their hobby. Four dead in an officer-involved shooting. First of all, they're including the killer in the dead. He killed three people, and then the cops, thankfully, shot him dead. But the Denver Post are a bunch of, well, we'll just leave it at that. You people, I don't have to dissect the bias, the apparent liberal bias of the mainstream media. They seem to be biased. He pointed out for the 5 millionth time over the past 25 years. All right. And we're not even counting the hundreds of shootings, hundreds, plural, that occur every on any given weekend, forget Halloween weekend, any given weekend across America, there are hundreds of shootings. People shot, people killed, people maimed. And here we are. And what do I lead off with? Well, we're going to start at the Waffle House. Have you people ever been to a Waffle House? Can I ask you this? Is it the intent of Waffle House management to only open Waffle Houses in the absolute worst neighborhoods in any given city? What's the deal with the Waffle House? Anyway, a gentleman he ate a sausage biscuit at the Waffle House, and he got upset when he was presented with his check at the Waffle House, as if it's some kind of restaurant. He was presented with his check by the maitre d' at the Waffle House, and he discovered that the price of biscuits had been raised to $1.50. Now, he had been used to paying only a dollar for the sausage biscuit at the Waffle House. The man became incensed and furious and threw his bill on the floor. And workers there say that he punched the door as he exited, shattering the glass of the door. And he was subsequently taken down by the police and was thrown in jail. What's his defense for shattering the glass door at the Waffle House? He claims he did not want to open the greasy, filthy door with his hand. And so he kicked it, and anyway, it's possible he has a case. I mean, it's the Waffle House, after all. All right. There's a Waffle House in Denver right around 60th and Federal. I mean, just driving by it, you feel like you could be shot. It's that bad. Speaking of drive-bys, parents are very upset with Snoop Dogg here in Colorado. Snoop Dogg, you may or may not know, started a nonprofit group to give inner-city kids a positive outlook. A positive outlet back in 2005. That's Snoop Dogg, the stoner gangster rapper, promoter of illicit drug use. I believe to his own children. I believe in an interview he said he'd be cool with his son smoking dope. Well, anyway, Snoop Dogg started this nonprofit back in 2005, and it's a youth football league, and it's called Snoop Youth. Snoop Youth Football. Anyway, it's not going too well here in Colorado. This Snoop Youth's first season in Colorado is... One hapless dad who signed his son up for Snoop Youth, he says, Snoop Youth is completely unfair, unregulated, uncoordinated, irresponsible. There were red flags, problems with scheduling, referees who didn't show up, unprepared fields, parents having to move the cones for the first down marker. The uniforms were late, the sizes were wrong, and they did not fit properly, said a father who actually signed his son up for Snoop Dogg's football. Yo, pops, I mean, what do you expect? It's Snoop Doggy Dog. Everyone involved is stoned out of their gourd. This poor dad, he's crying in his beer because he says the kids had to play all season without jerseys. And now the president of Snoop U Football says, quote, I think it's just first year growing pains, dude. Any kind of team that, you know, starts up, there's going to be those struggles. You know what I'm saying, bro? The remainder of the Snoop Youth football season has been suspended in Colorado. And hapless dad here in the interview, where did I get this from? KDVR.com, which is your Denver Fox affiliate. Hapless dad says, how do you explain to a six-year-old that you don't have any games to go to? You say, I'm sorry, son, but your dad is really a moron, and he signed you up for Snoop Youth. And then he's, anyway, so that there you have that. Just a sad, sad story. Now, speaking of football, since we're off baseball, we go to football. Reason number 1,002 to keep or get your kids out of the government schools. You like the Snoop Youth story? You know, Snoop purposely misspells his name. It's S-N-O-O-P-D-O-G-G, Snoop Dogg. But they spell Snoop Youth, S-N-O-O-P-Y-O-O-F, Snoop Youth, football. All right. Let's move on, though, because out in, the Seattle area, after each football game for the past 7 years, Coach Joe Kennedy, the assistant coach, waits until the players have left the football field, looks around and makes sure the coast is clear, walks onto the 50-yard line, kneels down, and prays. He says he prays for his students, thanks God for a good game and the opportunity to be involved in his students' lives. And he prays for God's blessing on their future. Now, he claims the prayer is very short, typically less than 30 seconds, and the whole time his eyes are shooting from left to right, making sure no school administrators are there and that no one is within earshot or eyeshot that could be injured and or offended by his flagrant prayer in the middle of the football field. Well, last week, the school board ordered him never again to pray in public. That's what the article says. I got this from Breitbart. Now, the Satanic Temple of Seattle had been threatening to attend the game to protest the school's tolerance of the coach's prayer and to force the school district to clarify its policy. Get him! We don't know if the Satanists actually showed up, but they obviously had the place staked out, and they were just looking for one Christian to pray in public. And sure enough, Coach Joe, old reliable, goes out there, goes down on one knee, Tebow style, says the prayer, and now the Satanic Temple of Seattle is in cahoots now with the American Civil Liberties Union, to get Coach Joe fired unless he will recant his faith and deny Christ in public over the public address system at the football. All right, I made that last part up, at least for the moment. They do want him suspended. Well, no, he has been suspended. They want him fired. He's offended the Satanists there in Seattle. And we know that when the Satanists get all hot and bothered and frothy at the mouth, that they'd be something to deal with. Oh, yeah, speaking of frothing at the mouth, we had here at the ranch our first negative interaction with the fauna out here on the prairie. Now, so far, things have been going very well with both the flora and the fauna. And for those of you who matriculated in the government schools, you can pause it right here and just go look those two words up, and then we'll wait for you to come back. So the flora and fauna have been very good, I mean, except for the garden. I think I may have already reported that we found out the only way to grow fruits and berries and vegetables is I think we need to build some kind of cage, because we're like an oasis in the midst of the prairie. And you grow vegetables, peas, carrots, you grow anything, and all the fauna around descend on the property and they gobble it all up. But that wasn't too negative, because we kind of felt good that the wildlife was eating well. But had a negative experience. I went outside, as I am often wont to do. After about 10:30, I like to go out and just check the trajectory of Orion, which is my all-time favorite constellation. And every fall and winter, Orion slowly but surely leaps over my house. And so I like to go out and check where he is. I get at the right angle to where he's just maybe a fifth of the way over the house. And later on in the season, he'll be right up there over the point of the house. Just before bedtime, I like to check Orion. So I'm out there, and it's cold, by the way. It was cold outside, and I noticed that all of our goats are on top of their house, which is unusual for our goats. They're almost domesticated, and they tend not to go outside when it's cold. They have good sense, but they're all up on their house, and they're all looking in the same direction toward the back corner of the goat pen. And so I walked out there in the dark and opened the gate. I went in, and the goats aren't making a sound, and their eyes are fixed toward the back corner of that goat pen. I looked, and in the dark, I couldn't see anything, but I sensed something. And I thought, you know what? You might want to grab a flashlight, genius. This could be some kind of wild animal. So I come back in the garage. I grab a flashlight, go back out. Sure enough, the goat's eyes, I look where they're looking, and there's a skunk. There's a skunk in the goat pen. Now, the skunk was trying to get out of the goat pen. I'm not sure how he got in there, but he was trying to get out. He was pushing his little head through all the little holes in the fence there, and he just could not get out, and he was getting pretty worked up. His tail was all flared out, and I just at that split second, I got that rush that a man gets when he knows he's about to have to shoot something. And I don't think in my entire life that I've ever been forced to shoot a wild animal out of fear for myself or my goats. So this was the first time, and I was in a bit of a quandary. I thought, should I go and ask? Should I go tell everybody? This is 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. Should I go tell them there's a skunk? Is that going to cause a huge panic? What should I do? So I made the decision to shoot the skunk. So I went in my garage and I grabbed my pistol. And with a pistol in one hand and a flashlight in the other, I got myself a safe angle on him. Now, for all you people who don't shoot much, if you do have to shoot something, try to make sure your neighbor's house isn't, you know, directly behind it. So I got a good safe angle where I'd be shooting right down into the pea gravel, and I shine my flashlight, and the thing I noticed about the skunk, that it was a really good-looking skunk. I mean, the fur was nice and shiny, the black was really black, and the white was pure white. Like, this skunk took care of himself. And I felt bad right at that moment. I felt really bad. I shine my flashlight through the fence, lift up the pistol, get the angle on him, and sure enough, the flashlight lights his eyeballs up like two homing devices. And I'm maybe 20 feet away from the skunk. Maybe 25 feet. No, probably 20 feet. And I take aim right between his glowing eyes, and I fired off a shot. And that skunk was looking right at me. And I said, I can't believe it. You missed that skunk. You're really off your game. But that skunk didn't move. I bet I missed him by a quarter of an inch. He probably felt the bullet go by his head. And he was frozen in just fear. And so I rose up, lined up the sights right between those glowing eyes, and well, I hit him with the second shot, because after that he was laying on his side just shuddering, and apparently he was spraying all over. And the skunk was dead. But it took two shots, and that was kind of embarrassing. But no one else was injured. And boy, the whole place stunk for 2 days. I tell you what, you don't want to have to shoot a skunk. And so anyway, I came in and I told my wife, and then we both felt bad for a while. My extremely attractive audio engineer pointed out to me some of the qualities of skunks. There's some good things they do. So I felt really bad until the next day when we did a little bit more research and we found out that, well, most of the skunks have rabies. They're fairly dangerous, and that I probably did the right thing by shooting the skunk. Thank you. I've got to come back, even though I could just let that one roll all the way through. And, yeah, it was a sad night. Sad night. Yeah. But, well, we had to do what we have to do out here in the wild prairie. So thank you, Stevie, for a proper ode to a skunk who gave his life for, well, he just made a wrong turn. And that's a lesson to all you youngsters out there. Sometimes you just make a wrong turn and you end up getting yourself shot. So be careful out there, I suppose. All right, so let's move on to now reason 1003 to keep or get your kids out of the government schools. A mob of Eastern Pennsylvania high school students attacked a group of police officers during a brawl outside of a class. The police were responding to reports of a large group of nearly 200 students fighting in the street. Well, when the police got there, some of the students broke off from beating on each other, and they turned on the police. The police were trying to pull the fighting punks apart, and the punks started beating on the police. Four police were injured. So reason number 1003, your kid might be in this group of 200 people, so they were egging the fight on, is what was happening. I recall instances like this from my high school days, as a matter of fact. Now, I went to a very small high school. My graduating class was 32 people, which that's the way it went out in West Texas. The kindergarten class would be like 80 people, and then graduating seniors would be about 30. That's the way, because half the girls ended up pregnant and married off or moved off. And then some of the boys either ended up in drugs, on drugs, in jail, or just parts unknown. Or they went to work in the oil fields. But I had an incident where I had to fight this guy. He'd been picking on me all year. I was kind of a skinny kid, even as a senior. And this younger guy had been bothering me all year. And finally I decided I'm going to fight this guy. And I'm going to do it before I turned 18. So this is the day before my 18th birthday. And I allowed this guy to corner me because I decided we're just going to duke this out. And so as we were fighting, we became surrounded by a rabid bunch of other students who were just, it was like watching a cage match. They were just in a rage. And it got me into a rage. Now, I was a boxer. Even though I was wimpy, I was a good boxer. So I was boxing the kid, and I was doing pretty good. His face was a bloody mess. And at one point, I caught him with a good left hook and just dropped him right to his knees. And he was on his knees. And at that point, I should have walked away because the fight was over. But I got caught up in the rush of all these kids screaming, "Get him, kick him, kick him, kick him." So I kicked him. And I kicked him in the face, and I felt terrible because I dislodged his retina, and he had to have major surgery, and it was horrible. It was a horrible thing. One of the reasons I will not subject my children to the government schools is because of the things I experienced. And I won't tell you about the dozen other times where I lost the fight. I won't even get into that, when they just pounded my head into the ground, and because that happened more frequently than the fight that I won. What bothers me to this day is that I allowed myself to be manipulated by these rabid kids all around me who had gone into an excited state and were just in a frenzy, like thirsting for blood, and I allowed myself to be manipulated by that, and I should have never done that. I feel bad about that kid to this day. And anyway, I can't remember his name, but I'm very sorry that I did that, and I wish I hadn't. All right, so we move on now to reason 1002, in no particular order, to get or keep your kids out of the government schools. I already did 1002. This is 1004. All right, we try to keep track around here. Let's see, this is up in the Sacramento, California area. There's a film circulating on YouTube and Facebook that shows a principal being body slammed by a student during a fight last Monday that required police to come into the school and arrest three of the brawling kids. So the kids, of course, who took the video of the principal being body slammed, they immediately posted it up on the internet so everyone could see it. And parents were shocked and outraged, hapless, moronic parents who don't understand that they're sending their children into an official, godless, secular death match every day at the government schools. That's what you're sending your kids. You're sending them right into the mouth of the lion every single day. And yet, when things like this happen, the principal gets beat up. Parents are shocked and outraged. The principal had to send a letter to parents, and he tried to acquit himself. He said, well, there had been two separate fights. And he said, school officials and law enforcement immediately responded to the incidents. And he went on in his letter to reassure parents that everything is going to be fine. The particular situation stabilized very quickly, right after I was bounced on the ground, rendered nearly unconscious, and then rescued by the police. So rest assured, everything's fine here at Florin High School, Sacramento, California, where the inmates are not only running the asylum, but battering their captors there in a public high school for many young men is just a prelude to institutionalization. They can get used to the idea of standing in line, eating at a cafeteria, and walking through metal detectors because those skills, you see, will come in handy for them later in life as they go on about doing whatever it is the government school factories do to prepare them to live life in an institution. All right. Now, so that was reason 1,000. Yeah, 1 through 2 through 4, yes. So we move outside the classroom into the culture file down to Fort Worth, Texas. I've been noticing, I think, and maybe this is just my perception, that the young people seem to be increasingly out of control. In fact, I'm driving around with a sales manager this past week, and I pointed this out to him as we were discussing some story of similar to what I just read. Students going crazy, beating on each other, beating on teachers and principals. And he insisted that, well, it's always really been this way. It's just that you hear about it more now because, you know, everybody's got a cell phone and the news media. I said, are you kidding me? I said, how old are you? He's like 64 years old. I said, you got to be completely lying to yourself to tell yourself that in the 1970s it was like this. Please. And then he admitted, well, yeah, you're right. I said, come on. What are you talking about? Anyway, Fort Worth, Texas, a group of elementary school-age children. Now, for those of you who matriculate in the government schools, think back to elementary school. It means you're like 8, 9, 10. A group of elementary school-age children are wreaking havoc in the Fort Worth area, south side of Fort Worth. CBS in Dallas-Fort Worth is reporting that the students are roaming the streets, throwing rocks and onions at cars, taking bikes from front yards, and most recently setting garbage on fire in the streets. I mean, it's like a Clockwork Orange. It's Fort Worth, Texas, for crying out loud. Neighbors describe this band of hedonistic young punks as a group of elementary school kids aged, between 8 and 12 years old. And they're out on a rampage after dark. Neighbors say they have called the police department on several occasions. That's because adults can no longer just walk out into the street and say, hey, come over here, and give the kid a smack. Because adults are afraid that the kid might shoot them, or several of the kids might shoot them. And so they're forced to call the police instead of doing what we used to do in a civilized society. When a punk was walking down the street, being belligerent, breaking things, you grab the kid and you give him a smack and you take him home to his mom and dad. But if you do that these days, you may be knifed, shot, or sued by the parents. And so the only other option is to call the police. Yeah, this hapless resident there, poor woman, She says, I don't know exactly what they can do, the police, but I had to call them. I know they can do better than me. That's unfortunate that the adults are no longer in control of the streets. And this is Fort Worth. This isn't the south side of Chicago. Although I'll bet the south side of Fort Worth is probably pretty rotten. It's probably pretty bad down there. So there you go. That's what our culture has devolved to. And who's to blame? Well, we can start with the lawyers. And to do that, we'll go to the justice file. And one of the most misplaced applications of intellect, time, energy, and money that has ever occurred is occurring now in Baltimore. Baltimore, Maryland, where more than 150 Baltimore police officers are to be outfitted with body cameras. That's right. Police department officials hope the cameras improve public confidence, provide additional evidence, and lead to fewer citizen complaints. Well, here's a couple of things. First of all, it shouldn't be the police who should be outfitted with body cameras first. It should be the politicians and the judges. And anyone who works in the justice system, from the lawyer right on down to the stenographer, they should have to wear body cameras at all times except when they're sleeping or going to the bathroom. They should be wearing the body cameras, first of all. And as far as the hope that this will lead to fewer citizen complaints, I predict that this will not help. It will not help because false narratives are now allowed, even with videotaped evidence. Even with videotaped evidence, people are allowed to show it, look at it. Everybody can see it. Everybody can see it clear as day what's happening on the videotape. And then they're allowed to lie about it and act as if something completely different happened. Yes, of course I'm talking about Ferguson. Of course I'm talking about other incidents. But, I mean, hey, look at Planned Parenthood. View. I am Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us, folks. Yes, I have a friend out in Vegas who he's planning possibly for running for governor of the state of Nevada. And the first thing he's going to commit to is that he will wear a body camera at all times, except when he's sleeping or going to the bathroom. And he thinks that that alone will appeal to enough people in Nevada that he could at least make a good showing of it. Anyway, I hope he does it because he would at least bring the issue up that, as to who exactly should be wearing body cameras. Now, I do agree that police should be wearing body cameras because, well, the nature of their business. It's good to have that additional evidence, that's all. But I just think the politicians and the judges and the lawyers should have to wear them first. That's all. And I'll tell you what these body camera videos are going to show the Black Lives Matter types. It's going to show right to their face that 99.995% of the time, the people being punched, kicked, and shot and put in a headlock by police deserve it. And that's going to make them even more upset. That's going to make them even angrier about it. Because when you show someone right to their face that they're a liar and that they're wrong and that they're intentionally misleading people, they hate you even more for it. So these body cameras on the police, I don't think are going to solve any of the problems having to do with inner city violence and rage against the police by young black men who mostly hate their mothers and fathers. That's who they mostly hate, and they take it out on the police. They hate their mothers and fathers because they've abandoned them. They've abused them. They've divorced, or if they ever even got married. They've misraised these kids, and they've destroyed their lives, and these kids hate them. And they end up hating themselves, and they hate the police. And it's got nothing to do with any individual incident. It's got more to do with an overarching cultural rot that has been allowed to be perpetrated on the peoples of the inner cities. And it's very sad. All right. Now, let's go to Nazi Germany. Yeah, I said Nazi Germany. Let's go to Anthony Kennedy's acknowledgement hat tip to the Nazis. WorldNet Daily is reporting that at a recent town hall meeting where citizens had the opportunity to pose questions to Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy, a young man took the microphone and asked the following of Justice Kennedy in regards to Kentucky County Clerk Kim Davis and her refusal, at least initially, to issue marriage licenses to sex perverts there in Kentucky, which, by the way, is in violation of Kentucky law. I know the Supreme Court issued an opinion, and everybody's got an opinion. I'm sure you've heard about opinions, right? Everybody's got one, right? And the Supreme Court has theirs, but the law of Kentucky actually says that it has to be a man and a woman, one man and one woman, as a matter of fact. Anyway, the young man asked Justice Kennedy, who, by the way, WND reports, was the swing vote in the Supreme Court's opinion on homosexual marriage. The swing vote gives a whole new meaning to the word swing vote. The young man asked Justice Kennedy the following. He said, "You claim new insights into the nature of marriage require states to issue marriage licenses to homosexual sex perverts." Oh, I added that. That was editorialized. That's basically what he was asking. He says, "You claim new insights into the nature of marriage require states to issue marriage licenses to homosexuals. Perhaps new insights into the nature of human life require states to take steps to stop abortion. Would you say, Justice Kennedy, that there are any state or federal officials with the authority to act according to their own judgment of the truth of new insights or the soundness of the court's constitutional interpretation regarding abortion, or would it be illegal for any federal official or state official to act according to the old understanding of life and the Constitution that they still judge to be the truth of the matter?" And Justice Kennedy replied in a very lawyerly way. Justice Kennedy said, "What is the duty of a public official if he or she cannot enforce a law they think is morally corrupt?" And then he said this. This is Justice Anthony Kennedy. He said, "How many judges do you think resigned in the Third Reich?" "Three," said Justice Kennedy. "Three judges resigned in the Third Reich." And he says, "Great respect has to be given to people who resign rather than do something they think is morally wrong. It would be difficult for me to say that people are free to ignore a decision of the Supreme Court." So Justice Kennedy has, in a backhanded way, compared the modern American Supreme Court to the Nazi Party. And basically he said, if you don't like our rulings, get out, resign. Now the Nazis, they would kill. And at least at this point, they haven't killed Kim Davis or other magistrates who are resisting. Could it come to that? I don't know. Justice Kennedy's the one who compared himself to the Nazis. So he's basically, Justice Kennedy is saying, we are the authority, and if you want to work in government, you're either going to toe the line or you should resign. And, well, it shouldn't be that way, but there you have it. Anyway, Kim Davis and her lawyers, they're obsessed with trying to find a moral workaround so that she can still keep her job and her salary and her pension and still not comply. And that hasn't happened. Kim Davis is complying. She's issuing marriage licenses to homosexual sex perverts down in Kentucky, contrary to Kentucky law. As the law is written right now on the books, she's doing it. And Justice Kennedy says she should do like the three judges back in Nazi Germany and she should resign. And my goodness, it kind of makes you stop and think, is that where we are? I mean, he's comparing American jurisprudence to the Nazi jurisprudence? Is that where we are? Well, I think he's made a good point. I think that is where we are. And, of course, the other option that Justice Kennedy has not elucidated is that the lesser magistrates have the right to assert their authority over the Supreme Court. That's right. They have the authority to do it. And more of them should be doing it. And I wish they would. Or resign. Resigning is honorable. But they shouldn't be going along like Kim Davis and her hapless lawyer, Matt Staver, who's misled her. I mean, these are the Nazis, Matt. This is not a time to find a moral workaround to try to work within the system. I mean, please. All right. So there we have that. The modern American Nazism rearing its ugly head in a black robe. Justice Anthony Kennedy, he knows where he's going. He knows what he is. Deep down, his black little heart draped, hidden behind that black robe is his black heart. He knows what he is. All right. Now, the rest of this stuff is, oh, here. Let me just quickly. America is going to war against ISIS. I know. I've got a story here from NBC. Defense Secretary, whatever his name is, said last week that the U.S. is about to begin direct action on the ground against ISIS. Now, is it me, or I thought we had begun some sort of action about 2 years ago. Maybe that was not direct action. Maybe that was indirect action. Maybe that was fecklessness on behalf of the Ho administration. But now they say they're actually going to get serious. Defense Secretary, what's his name, says, we won't hold back from supporting capable partners in attacks against ISIL, whether by strikes from the air or direct action on the ground. NBC reports that after months of denying that U.S. troops would be in any combat role in Iraq, the Defense Secretary, what's-his-face, kind of let it slip last week that, well, we had to go and rescue some people. They were Iraqi soldiers, and, well, it kind of, some boots were on the ground. In fact, one American was killed in combat with his boots on the ground in Iraq last week. Now, I'm not going to sit here and point out that Barack Obama has broken yet another promise to us, because I support this. I called for boots on the ground against ISIS after I saw the first beheading. So I want to thank Barack Obama for taking a cue from Vladimir Putin and finally deciding to go to war against ISIS. I mean, I was just talking about the Nazis as it relates to jurisprudence here in America. Well, this is actually much closer to how the Nazis actually did things. If you didn't agree with them, they killed you. And that's what ISIS is all about, and that's why they must be dispatched with extreme prejudice. Back to the NBC story here. White House Deputy Press Secretary, what's his name, says the Ho administration has, quote, no intention of long-term ground combat, to which ISIS said, okay, we're good with that. We can stick. That's why everybody wants a piece of the action. Everybody needs a main attraction. I got what everybody needs. Satisfaction guarantees. Everybody wants a piece of the action. We'll be right back. Funeral View. I'm Doug McBurney, joined in studio by my extremely audio engineer. I'm so glad that you have stuck with us through the almost the end. It's not the end yet, and so I will plug my appearance tomorrow on Bob and Yart Live right here in Denver. If you're in the Denver metro area, you can listen to it live via traditional terrestrial AM broadcast. And, of course, you can listen to it within about a half hour after we get off the air, online at KGOV.com. Be sure to tune in, because Bob is going to talk about the King James Bible and that controversy, and then I'm going to talk about other stuff. Well, it'll be a well-rounded broadcast. You'll have King James only and that whole controversy, and then I intend to bring up something about a comet, I do believe. I believe I'll do a comet and granite exfoliation and things like that. So it should be a lot of fun. All right, so hat tip to Barack Obama for deciding to go to war against ISIS, if indeed that's true. That's the thing about Barry, is that he's a congenital liar, and you just don't know if he's serious. And anyway, we'll see what happens. We'll see who wins. Will it be Barry or Vlad? Who do you think has a better chance of destroying ISIS? Barack Obama, famous from the bathhouse scene in Chicago as a state senator, or Vladimir Putin, who wrestles bears with no shirt on? Who do you think ISIS is more scared of? I work for KGB. It's impossible that I'm gangster. Come, watch me wrestle this bear. I will destroy him. All right. Now we're going to go into the... all right. I've only got a couple of stories left, because, and they're so disturbing. I'm going to save the comet for tomorrow to try to rescue the audience from the King James only. Actually, it might be interesting. We'll see. It should be. So I got this great comet story that I know Bob will not be able to resist. He's going to push for the King James, and I'm going to say, I got this comet. He'll be like, okay, let's do the comet. But on a serious note, folks, from the personhood file, the highest court in the state of New York, the Supreme Court of Appeals, has reversed the conviction of a Long Island woman for causing the death of her daughter. The fatality occurred 6 days after the child was delivered by C-section following a head-on collision in which her mother was at fault. The case, now this woman was convicted of manslaughter in the death of her daughter, but the justices in their wisdom have overturned that, and they say the case turned on the question of whether the mother, Jennifer Jorgensen, can be charged with homicide when the fatal injury to her baby occurred while the baby was in utero. Okay, are you able to follow this? This is very difficult. The mother, Jennifer Jorgensen, was in the third trimester of her pregnancy in May of 2008 when her car hit a vehicle driven by another couple who were both killed. The mother, Jorgensen, was indicted for homicide, DUI, and manslaughter for the death of her baby. Now, she was convicted on only one charge. And now she was drunk and she killed two people, but the jury in the state of New York could not convict her of homicide for killing those two people. She was drunk. She was driving. She did kill those two people, but the jury could not agree. But she was convicted on one charge, manslaughter, for causing the death of her daughter. Her daughter was in utero at the time of the injury. The woman was rushed to the hospital, and the baby was delivered in an emergency C-section in an effort to save the baby's life, and the baby died several days later. Okay, are you with me on this? So last Thursday, a 5-member majority of the Court of Appeals in New York said that the central question in the case was whether the state legislature intended to hold pregnant women criminally responsible for engaging in reckless conduct against themselves and their unborn fetuses, such that they should be subject to criminal liability for parental conduct that results in postnatal death. And they said the answer to this question is no, she should not be punished because the baby had not yet been delivered, and the baby was delivered by C-section, and they don't want mothers who are drunk and have injured their child. They don't want mothers who've done something that horrible to then resist an emergency C-section because they could be criminally indicted if the child dies after it's born. You see, they don't count the baby in the womb as a person, the technocrats and the lawyers who run the proctocracy. And so they basically said, look, since the baby was injured while it was still in the womb, it wasn't a person. And then it died after it was born, and that's when we call it a person, but we're not going to call it a person because, and then they go through, they do a very lawyerly explanation of why they are saying that this woman should not be punished for all the people she killed, including her own unborn child. So the five-judge majority carried the day with their opinion. But in an eight-page dissent, Judge Eugene Fahey said the following, quote, he said, I cannot join in a result that analyzes our statutes to determine that a six-day-old child is not a person. So here's one judge in the Reich who is at least willing to say, look, we've got to draw the line. The kid was 6 days old. Mein Führer, please, I can't go along with this. But none of them count the child in the womb as a person. And it's a very serious matter, ladies and gentlemen, because if you say the child in the womb is not a person, and then later on you find out you were wrong, and you're standing in front of the living God Almighty, with the power to determine the fate of your eternal soul, you're going to have to explain yourself to him. You don't have to explain yourself to me. What I think about it really doesn't matter. But it's a very serious matter if you find out you're wrong on Judgment Day. And, you know, those of us who draw the line for personhood at fertilization or the very beginning, guaranteed we will never kill an innocent person by abortion. Guaranteed. Those of you who draw the line elsewhere, whether it's at some point of the quickening or it's 6 days later or after birth or they take the first breath or whatever, well, you're going to have to explain yourself to God when you find out you're wrong. So it's very, very serious matter. You should consider it seriously before you come to an opinion. All right, now... So the New York Supreme Court says a baby is not a person. All right. It's disgusting. And this is another reason why the children are getting out of control more and more. Is because now we're two, three, four generations in some case completely removed from any respect for the most innocent human life. And that can only lead to violence and bloodshed and disaster and calamity of biblical proportion. Maybe it won't happen in my lifetime. Maybe I'll get by, but maybe you won't, because things are intensifying. Things, more and more horrible things are happening more and more often. Despite the fact that the FBI came out with a report last week saying, "Oh, crime is down." Yeah, right. Anyway, finally, I don't know if I want to do this story, but I have to do this story, even though it's very disturbing. This is a report I pulled down from Breitbart. Are you people familiar with People.com? Well, you're familiar with People Magazine, right? Everybody's familiar with People Magazine. Well, apparently they have a website, People.com, and they have a new web series. This is like a TV series, but they do it online now. 6-year-old Davina Keswani is the star of the show, and... Davina was originally named Dev and was born a male, but now is assuming the role of a female and starring in the new web series created for People.com. This is a 6-year-old person. This is a 6-year-old boy, if I can be so bold. Breitbart reports that the parents live in a world of their own. Okay, that's obvious. In the third episode of the series, the mother insists the day Dev could walk, the walk was feminine. At which point she should have been restrained and taken for some sort of mental evaluation. How can you say that your boy has a feminine walk at, what, 18 months? When do the kids start walking? 9, 10 months? Please. So she says the day Dev could talk, it was really feminine. Which she should have uttered that from a gurney being strapped and taken to a mental hospital. But instead, she gets a reality show on People.com. So apparently a kindergarten teacher early on in Devin's career. I'm going to call the boy Dev, okay? I'm not going to call him Davina. I'm sorry. But early on in Dev's career, a kindergarten teacher helped the parents understand that their child was gender confused or whatever. After talking to the kindergarten teacher, by the way, kindergarten, that's another creation of the Nazis. Just as an aside, it's a German word if you look at it, kindergarten. That was where Hitler took the kids at 4 or 5 years old and started raising them. Similar to what we do here in America when we turn them over to the government schools. Yeah, very similar, except for the whole swastika and the gas chambers. We're not there yet. But a very, very similar mindset. So after talking to the kindergartner teacher and understanding gender identity issues better, the mentally deranged mother says, it took me about 30 seconds to just take that in, and then I wrapped my sons around her, she says about her son, and said, you will never have to be Dev again, ever. She said to her 6-year-old son, or maybe 5 years old at that point. So now Dev hangs out with Lily Rubenstein, who's a transgendered 15-year-old. So this is a criminal act of being perpetrated in front of God and everybody live on the internet with no shame. This 6-year-old boy who's been transgendered by his mentally deranged parents into a girl now hangs out with a transgendered 15-year-old mentally deranged sex pervert. Dev has also joined the Girl Scouts and, of course, plans to speak at her government school about transgenderism. So there we have reason number, 1005, to keep your kids out of the government school because Dev and her mentally ill parents may show up and teach your kids that they're confused about their gender. The deranged, insane mother admits, maybe standing alongside the virtually invisible father who doesn't make an appearance in the story for some reason. The mentally deranged mother admits, in a lighthearted manner, well, we're not your normal American family, but it's a life and it's so full and rich. And so this mother is obviously enjoying the attention to her mental illness that she is transmitting to her poor innocent son. And, well, they should all be arrested. People.com, their headquarters, the doors should be kicked in. And they should be perp walked out with a jacket over their head and handcuffs. And the whole lot of them should be thrown in prison. And then the kindergarten teacher, somebody should hunt her down and arrest her as well. Unbelievable. Unbelievable the state that we find ourselves in, ladies and gentlemen. But hey, stick with us because there's nowhere to go from here but up. All right? Onward, upward, heavenward, where we are supposed to be headed and where if you hang around with us long enough, well, you'll end up on that trajectory. I promise you. Something similar to Orion's trajectory. Yes. So stick with us. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at Theology Online, at AmericanRightToLife.com, and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen, here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. And should the Lord tarry, we will be back next week. And until then, myself and my extremely attractive audio engineer, we wish you the best. And insist that the grace of God go with you and that the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.